Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. On today's edition of the podcast, we have Carly Findlay, who is a disability activist, and she asked me to pass on a warning to you that we used some ableist language just in discussion around what is ableist language, examples of. So please be aware of that happening in this episode before you listen to it.
I'm a feminist, but the self-talk I do about my body is so dreadful, my thighs should sue me for defamation.
I'm a feminist, but I think false eyelashes make me look more beautiful because they definitely do. They do, though. I won't do a photo shoot without them because it's just... I mean, they make me look 100 times more beautiful.
I have to say I love false eyelashes as well, but the thing that I don't like, and I know this will happen, and it still happens every time, when I take them off, I remind myself that it's not a spider in the basin. I remind myself that it is not a spider in the basin, and then when I've washed them off and they're in the basin, I'm like, fuck, it's a spider! Every time.
Small price to pay.
I'm a feminist, but even though I hate that little girls get judged on their appearance and are complimented on how they're dressed, I always buy my friend's 2 daughters clothes for their birthdays.
Oh, people judge that. They didn't
know. Totally. I only have
a son. It's a shame valve. This is what this is. We're exfoliating shame. It's like taking a large loofah into a shower and stepping out cleansed. That's what this is for.
And I do... like.
Is this terrible of Cal? Yes, obviously. Is she a bad feminist?
Yes,
of course, that's the point.
In my defence, I've checked with their mum and I've checked with them if that's what they would like. They live in Tasmania, so there's only 2 shops. So... two excellent shops in Tasmania.
Okay.
They have everything.
If you are living in Tasmania and listening to this podcast, please tweet at Calbo with all of your problems about what she just said. Do not tweet at GuiltFemPod or at DeborahFW. I just need that to be very clear. Hashtag Tasmania. Hashtag I didn't say it.
The good thing about Deborah is she's always got your back. So...
I just know
know how angry Tasmanians get.
No. Tasmania.
I've upset them before, and I'm not going there again. Not for you, not for anybody.
I am from New Zealand, which is the Tasmania of Tasmania, right? So beautiful place where my friends live with their daughters, and they don't get access to as much shops as we do here. So I buy them clothes, and I don't buy them like cute little dresses. I buy them like funky little fake leather jackets and little silver puffer vests and things like that. I mean, we have
to dress them like the village people.
Ah, so it's not so bad now, is it? Now they're dressing them like gay icons. But I think they are 6 and 9, and we share the same taste because I dress like a children's presenter. So, but I'm fully aware that because I have a son, I don't get to dress a daughter in funky clothes, and yeah. I know that I'm living through. And but like when I compliment a child, if they're wearing something cool, I always go, "I like your style. I like what you have put on." Mm. Like rather than going, "You look pretty."
Yes.
So I'm desperately trying to justify the terrible thing that I'm doing.
No. My favourite one. No, I shouldn't say my favourite child. That's not right. One of my favourite children, I call her my goddaughter because she's not my goddaughter, but she's like a goddaughter. Please adopt this if you would like it. Basically, you just see a child you like and you say, "I'm your codmother." No one can argue with it because it's cod, it's faux. You're their furry codmother. And she just comes down in the most incredible outfits and she says, "Oh, I'm fabulous party batgirl," or something. And she's wearing like a bat cape and like a pink tutu, and like she just puts together these incredible outfits. She's like my style icon.
I love it. I love people who are their own art.
Yes.
You know, like Iris Apfel, like who's still doing it in the 90s and things like that.
Yeah, and she's like Iris, only she's 7. I'm a feminist, but I use Taylor Swift's Shake It Off and Taylor Swift's Why You Gotta Be So Mean as anthems to get past hostility from other serious academic feminists, because sometimes pop feminists are the antidote to Twitter feminists. Why you gotta be so mean? That's not right, is it? It wasn't quite right. Humming puppy people, you do it. Why you gotta be so mean? That's not the right note. What is it?
I don't know. I need to shake it off.
That's not right either. That's Shaking Stevens.
Do the hippie shake. Yeah. That's not, isn't it? Yeah. All right. I'm a feminist. But when my 8-year-old son, who is quite shy, can't get to his locker at school because all the little confident girls keep pushing in, I'm torn between telling him to stand up for himself and worrying that if I do, I'm just raising another entitled white male.
Oh.
But he's always wearing a lovely dress, so that is great.
I'm a feminist, but someone showed me a photo and said, "You look great in this. It's such a great photo of you." And I thought, if that is genuinely a better than average representation of my looks, then I never want to leave the house again. There is nothing worse than someone telling you this is a good photo of you and you looking at it and going, that's a good photo of me. It's such a horrifying, it's like a mirror to hell. So upsetting. I'm like, don't tell me what is a good photo of me. You can tell me you've got a photo of me, I will decide whether it's a good one. It's not for you to tell me if it's a good photo. I don't like it. I won't have it. Live from the Malt House in Melbourne, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Bronson White, and guest co-host Cal Wilson. A very special guest, Carly Findlay, talking about language. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. And I am aware that's getting more ridiculous every time I say it, and there's nothing I can do about it. I don't know how to say it normally anymore. It's over for me. Have you had more of a guilty day or a feminist day? I've been asking you all week, so I have to ask you about today. Guilty day, feminist day.
Has my day been feminist? My day, well, I went shopping and instead of doing more prep, I bought this dress, so I don't know what that means.
I'm going to say feminist. Do you know why? It's bold. It radiates you. If I were a men's rights activist, I'd be frightened right now.
And just, I'll tell you why else.
Just through the sheer peacocks on the dress.
I will tell you why else it's feminist.
What?
It's got pockets.
It's all we want.
all we want.
It's all we want. Listen, they don't know how much less we would accept if they gave us that. They don't know. They don't know. If they did know, they would make it happen. Because they would distract us for a good 6 months if everything had pockets. I mean the patriarchy. I don't know. I assume the patriarchy makes our clothes.
It makes me think of, like, you know, like if we all had pockets, like the first 6 months would just be every woman talking to every other woman going, I've got pockets.
Yeah.
Like, it was like when mobile phones came in and one of my friends got the first mobile phone in our friend circle, and we all went out and bought toy mobile phones because we were like, what a fucking dickwad, who needs a mobile phone? And so every time she took a phone call, we'd be like, I'm having a phone call as well. And every single phone call started with, guess where I am? I'm on the stairs. It just made me think, if we all got pockets, we'd be like, I've got pockets. I've got one in the back and one in the front.
Because I remember mobile phones coming in as well, and I just think there are some people in this audience for whom that is such vintage comedy. It's like if when we were 20, someone was on stage going, I remember when the first car came into our town, and we were all front seat, back seat, all right, Roger, and we were all on our horses, just laughing at him, and now they're everywhere.
Another bit of trivia from that time. My first job in television, we got the internet at work, and all the writers were like, what do we need that for? Like, we couldn't see a reason for the internet, and it also cost like $1.49 per minute to use it or something like that.
You had to wind it up.
But we downloaded a recipe from the internet, and then we went round to the head writer's place, and his wife cooked it, and it was like magic. We were like, oh, it's a recipe from the internet. That's real.
Okay, can I just say, this is not the most feminist story you've ever told.
No, because...
That the first thing you did with the internet was a recipe.
That we made the head writer's wife cook.
Oh, I'm very disturbed by this story. But surely you should have immediately looked up Patriarchy Smash. Like, that should have been the first thing, not bangers and mash.
Patriarchy Smash sounds like some kind of a variation on avocado, like you get it at a cafe.
It's very similar. Can I have the Eggs Benedict with a side of smashed patriarchy?
The Patriarchy Smash is just avocado served on an old white guy. I'm sorry, I can't finish this. Can you take it back? Has it been feminist or guilty?
It's involved some self-care, so I'm going to say feminist.
What does that mean? What is that a euphemism for? Because if so, that is very feminist.
I meant yoga.
Oh, okay. Yoga.
I went to Humming Puppy in Prahan, and I did the 60-minute unified yoga class.
It's called Humming Puppy.
Yoga studio. When I come to Melbourne, I stay in an Airbnb near the Humming Puppy in Prahran.
Humming Puppy.
It's called Humming Puppy. Do you know why it's called Humming Puppy? Does anyone else go to Humming Puppy?
Yeah.
Come on, Humming Puppy brothers and sisters. It hums. The walls hum. So you go in there to do yoga, and it's normally yoga studios all look like white and floaty. This is all black. It's all dark. And you go in, and out of the walls is coming this...
You're in a condemned building by this description.
It's not really the right sound, is it? Can you do, anyone who goes, can you do the sounds?
Oh, like
that's
a
it.
Hum. A hum.
It's like a puppy noise.
A hum, as opposed to a kind of dystopian.
It's a little bit Black Mirror, though, isn't it? It's great in a good way. And you go in and it's all raked yoga mats, so that if you're at the back row, you can look down on the teacher. It's like a theatre. And you go in there and you do an hour of. No. It's not like the Loch Ness Monster. It's more of a... Thank you.
Ooh.
And it's amazing. And you come out feeling like a new person.
And do you get a free puppy at the end? Like, is that where the puppy...
No. The puppy is a position. There's a puppy position in yoga that makes you feel very good.
Is it just putting your nose in someone's crutch? I've got pockets.
They have emboldened you in ways that they should not have. This is what happens when you give women the vote. You need a lot of content, and so I end up just saying stuff that's true that I think later regrettable. I'm sure many people know that now. And sometimes they email me and explain how what I said was right or wrong, or they also have that problem.
It's nice though, isn't it? It's confronting
for
you.
Oh, it's nice. No, it's really
lovely,
nice.
Lovely to know that there are
it's
people feeling
connected.
It's lovely
that people relate. No, it is lovely. But sometimes I go, I can't even believe I told my best friend that. It appears that I've told Peter from Havisham that. And it's really changed his life. It's good news, Peter from Havisham. And also, I should say, I need to find a way to reply to every email, and I don't have that way yet. I need to find someone to help me or something.
I know what to do. You just reply to every single email with, lol.
Some people are saying really sad stuff, Cal. Some people are saying this particular episode moved me because I had a traumatic incident, and then they describe the traumatic incident, and I'm really moved that they're telling me that and they're sharing that with me. I think if I just write back a blanket lol, they're going to be very disappointed.
I can see the flaw in my plan.
Yeah. Can you
or
see?
Just, what about lol or crying emoji?
I can't even see the plan in your flaw. It's just flaw.
We can go back to talking about yoga again if you want to.
No, we've got to talk about language. We've got to talk about language a little bit. There was a really interesting article in The Guardian about language. The binary nature of language, that through feminism we're starting to invent language like mansplaining and manspreading, or she-o, girl boss, awful things. Girl boss is a Netflix show, so I guess, I don't know, maybe it's ironic.
Whatever. Who here would be happy to run a company and be referred to as the girl boss? No, I'm just the guy.
But the sort of manspreading. When I read this, I thought, oh, this has given me pause. Because I've added two to that lexicon. I mean, I don't know that they've really taken off, but I feel like they will. One is mansploring, which is a genuine phenomenon.
What's mansploring?
Well, it's when I go to the counter in a pub to check that they're serving food, and they say, we're not serving food anymore. And I come back, and my husband says, oh, I'm going to get some. I'm like, oh, they're not serving food anymore. And he goes, oh, no, they will be. And I'm like, no, just ask. And he then goes and explores further because he doesn't believe me.
Oh, there's a word
and
there.
It's all very well. It's all very well when it's lunch at the counter. But when it's my fucking handbag, I mean, I'm like, well, I'll just check in case you have got a charger in your handbag. I would know if I had a charger in my handbag. Stop transferring in my handbag.
That's a great word.
Yeah,
what's the word for this? When I was convinced we had a gas leak, it was like, I'd smell gas outside our front door, and I knew it wasn't my husband because he was inside. Yeah. What a cheap joke I just made up. So I was convinced I could smell gas coming from outside our house.
Yeah.
And my husband was like, nah. And I was like, no, I can totally smell it. I was like, nah, you're just imagining things. I was like, oh, totally
yes,
smell it.
Yes.
And then there were two guys doing something with a gas line down the road. And I was like, can you just come over here and tell me if we've got a gas leak? And I've got, you've totally got a gas leak.
Okay, do you know what I'm going to call that? He-nile. Why? They just go, no. Oh. I still have no moments with men in my life that I lie awake at night and think about being no'd on things. I'm just like, no. And you know that it's true. I know 100% that it's true.
See, I have a kind of a crossover thing here too. My husband's a beautiful man, by the way. He's lovely. He is by far my favourite husband. And I've had several. I've only had two. This one seems to have caught. But I have anxiety, and so what we've got into is he just dismisses any concern that I have as anxiety. But the thing is, with anxiety, sometimes you're right.
And so, same as paranoia. Sometimes they are all after you.
Yeah. But it'll be something like, I'll be like, I'll express a concern and be like, that's just your anxiety. I'm like, no, really, I don't think our child should be paragliding off the roof. Like,
in terms of our language, are we creating a further binary society by noticing gender trends and then just like imposing it and saying, well, that's what you do? Because if that's what you do, it's like saying, telling a child they're naughty, then they think, well, a naughty child does naughty things. Whereas if you say, that's naughty, but you're a well-behaved child, I'm sure that's not the right language we're meant to use either. I'm sure we're just meant to say, you're you, everything's fine. I don't know what
I'm saying. you, but I don't like your behaviour.
Is that what you meant to say?
That's what you meant to say.
I love you, but I don't like your behaviour.
Whereas I'm just like, what are you doing?
What about when you don't love them, though? Because you, in that moment, do you think, I wish I'd never had you. You've ruined my life. My life was so much better before you came in, and now I'm just a slave to your whims. And if I could turn back time, I definitely would. So I have to pretend I love you, and that things. Because people always say, "Well, I wouldn't have it any other way." But they're saying that while crying and filming.
I reckon you should probably hold off telling your kid that until, I don't know, maybe their birthday or something like that. Just like.
I mean, I have no children, so it's possible that my view on this is skewed.
But the thing about that is, like, as a parent, I try and be measured in what I say to my son, but he does not have that restriction. And so, like, I asked him to wash his hands, and he went, "You've ruined my life! I'm going to my room!" Like that was just... He was not like, "Oh, this might upset Mum." And then you go, "Can you brush your hair?" And you're like, "I hate you! This is the worst day of my life!"
It's... A parent-child relationship is an abusive relationship. The parent-child contract is this. I worked it out the other day. It's this. One of you says, "I will never leave you." And the other one says, "Let's test that, shall we?" Every single day. Every day of your child's life, they're testing the idea that you will never leave them. And they're doing things that if anybody else did them, not only would you leave, your friends would stage an intervention.
My son is the only person in the world who I have ever let vomit into my eye. It wasn't a thing, I wasn't like, you know, this is a trust exercise.
What? He said, "May I?" And you said,
No, he was just standing in his cot, this when he was about two, and he was just crying, and I went in to see him, and he just looked at me and went, "Ah!" and just like vomited all over my face.
I don't think you let him, I think he did it, and you had to tell yourself retrospectively that it was your
thrown
choice.
Thrown him away, like I could have like, "Ah!" but I held on to him as he,
as I said, it's an abusive relationship. So recently, I was doing some writing, and one of those messages in the other box popped up in Facebook and distracted me. You know the other messages? It's like, "You don't know this person, but they've decided they know you." And the message was from what appeared to be a young man, and it simply said, "Make me a sandwich." Now, if you don't know, this is a traditional opener from a men's rights activist to a feminist. "Make me a sandwich." And I thought, I could just ignore this, or I could write something rude, or maybe I could use language to see if I could have a meaningful discussion with this young man. And it went something like this. Well, it went exactly like this. "Him, make me a sandwich. Me, sorry, have we met? Is it possible you meant to message your mother? Him, lol, you belong in the kitchen. Me, that's where I am now. It's one of various rooms in my house. I'm pretty comfortable here. Him, do you like the bedroom? Me, it's being painted right now, so I'm looking forward to that being done. Him, feminism is cancer. Me, how so? Him, no reply. Me, sorry, what do feminism and cancer have in common? Him, you're a man-hater. Me, some of my favourite husbands are men. Him, lesbian. Me, briefly in university. Married to a straight man now, bit dull, isn't it? Him. It must be for him if you're a feminazi. Me. Oh, that might be the confusion. I'm a feminist, not a feminazi. Him. Same thing. Me. How so? Him. You want men dead. Me. Gosh, do you want women dead? Him. No. Me. Well, we're the same then. We don't want anyone dead. Do you want men and women to have the same rights? Or do you think one deserves more rights than the other? Him. I don't want anything. It's you that wants to take from men. Me. What do you think I'd like to take from you? What do you have that I might want? Him. Our jobs, our children, our dicks. Me. Me. I definitely don't want random children or unknown dicks. Job, and it looks like you live in America, so I probably won't take yours. What do you do? Him. I'm at high school. Me. I've had that job. Wasn't that great, to be honest? Winky face. Him. High school and feminism both suck. Me. I think high school can suck more. If feminism was the idea that men and women should have the same, would you hate it? Him, no, but it isn't. Me, it is for me, so maybe you like my sort of feminism. Him, feminists only care about women. Boys get circumcised too, and feminists don't care about that. They only care if it's girls. Me, tell me about why male circumcision is a bad thing. Have you got an article I could read, or is there a page I could donate of a charity you support? Him, you're not like the other feminists. You're a reasonable one. Me. Do you think all men's rights activists are reasonable all the time? Him. Not all of them. Me. So maybe it's just that some people are unreasonable and it's not about women or men. Him. Maybe. Me. I hope you meet some more feminists you like. I know loads of cool ones. Some of the cool ones might not seem cool if you start by insulting them, though. So maybe ask them something else, like what they like about feminism or whether they'll support your men's cause. Some of them are super helpful. Him. Okay. Me. Basically, the feminists I know think society would be better if it were represented by the people who are in it. Do you think if half the people are men and half the people are women, that all the people who make decisions should be men? Him. No. I think it's fair that everyone is represented. Me, cool. So maybe you're more of a feminist than you think. Him, lol. Me, if you want to know more, maybe try listening to my podcast. Him, what's it called? Me, make me a sandwich. To be honest, just to have an episode called Make Me Sad. Our guest today is a blogger, writer, speaker, and appearance activist. She challenges people's thinking about what it's like to have a visibly different appearance. Please welcome to the stage the wonderful Carly Findlay! Disabled first? She told me to ask her that. I felt like it was a really confrontational question. Like, I was trying to set the scene. Carly, how are you today? I'm going back. For the edit. Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
How are you?
Good. Good.
You know, I like a feminist but.
Yes.
Go on, tell us, what is it?
I'm a feminist but I'm really glad that my skin condition means that I still look about 17, so I will never age.
Because you posted on Facebook the other day your high school photo and then a photo of you now, and it was literally like you'd just taken off the tie and it was the same photo.
Yeah, I got invited to my high school reunion, like 19 years, clearly they can't count. But anyway, it's hideous. It was hell at high school, it was hell in that Facebook group for half a day. So anyway, I was... You know, every time I spoke in there, people would leave or people would ignore me. It was just like high school. Anyway, so I just trolled them and I made that photo collage, and I put a photo of me 20 years ago and me now. And then I said, hey, so this is me 20 years ago, this is me now. I'd love to see what you look like. No one said a word.
So funny. Can you just tell us why you identify as disabled?
Yeah, sure. So for me, disability...
Smooth. That was smooth, wasn't it? Smooth segue. Sorry, I asked when I hadn't done the preamble, and then I just... Yeah, sorry. I'm going to stop talking.
I identify as being disabled because disability is a part of identity, like gender, sexuality, race, culture, religion, all of those things. So disability is okay to have as an identity. It's not a bad thing. You can say the word, it's fine. You don't have to shy away from it. You don't have to say special needs, no handicapable, please no. Just say the word disabled or disability. I identify because, well, I was born with a skin condition, so that's my impairment, but I am disabled by society. And mostly, not so much by, you know, our traditional access needs, like ramps and stairs and things like that. But I am disabled by people's attitudes.
How does that work?
People are quite small-minded. I was just saying in the green room before that, you know, some people don't know how to speak to someone that looks like me or someone in a wheelchair or someone that's blind. Either they don't say anything or they say something really silly.
It sort of seems to me, we were talking about this before, Carly, that sometimes people are so worried about offending you that they just say something incredibly offensive, like they're trying to kind of overcompensate. Like, because you were talking about your experience last night. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, please tell us.
Yeah, I delivered a speech for International Women's Day last night, and I talked about media representation and how people with disability are often exploited, and also how people like me are dehumanised in the media. We're called headlines like Snakeskin Woman and Mermaid Baby and things. Anyway, so I talked all about that, and I delivered some statistics, and I talked about my book, and, you know, overall I was quite, I'd like to think I was quite intelligent. A woman came up to me afterwards, and, you know, and I want to preface it by saying the majority of people I met last night were great, and the council was great and everything, but this woman came up to me, and she was just stroking my arm like this. And then she says, oh, great speech, and she kept on stroking, and then she says, would you like me to scratch you?
So intrusive to someone they weren't in an intimate relationship with. So I feel like that's something for a very much for a romantic partner.
Yeah.
But someone you've been dating for, I'd say, at least 6 months.
Yeah.
That's not a fourth date. No. Can I scratch you?
You don't even do a poo on the fourth date.
My condition is that I cannot talk about scatology in any form. Yeah, no, I find it very...
It just makes it more enjoyable to talk about.
No, it doesn't. It makes it less enjoyable.
Okay,
less
so,
enjoyable.
So I don't like poo either, it's fine.
Thank you, good. Well, let's stop talking about it.
I've got an 8-year-old son, I've got no choice.
Okay.
So when you told me that story for the first time, I just could not... I was so gobsmacked that someone would be so ludicrous as to offer to scratch you. And I was like, I can't even think of a comeback. Like, I can't... Because usually I'm quite good at, like... And I thought about it all afternoon, and all I could come up with was, when she offered to scratch you, that if you turn around and went, yeah, can you do my ass? Like, how are you not constantly telling people to fuck off? Like,
do you?
Yeah.
What do you say?
Just fuck off.
Not always. How do you, what is a good and constructive constructive way to talk to people about, for example, ableist language? Do you have, you must be an expert in this.
So firstly, I guess if I want to address those intrusive questions, can I, firstly I say, you don't really know me, do you really think that's an appropriate question, or we haven't met, that's really intrusive of you, do you want to say hello first? But how do I handle ableist language? Well, ableist language, firstly, is a lot of disability slurs. The R word, the M word, the other M word.
Could you say what those words are? Because I don't think we know them. Oh, we know the R word.
The R word, yeah. Okay, I'll say the other words.
Okay.
Moron, midget, and other words like crazy and mental and spastic. And could please put a content warning on this around ableist language, if that's all right.
Okay, yes.
Because I don't condone this. But I'm going to say it.
No, it's important that we know. Because I think I would say, oh, I was sitting in traffic and I was going crazy because I just thought, we're not going to be at the theatre in time. Mm-hmm. Now, I would say that, and I wouldn't think that someone with mental health issues would think that I was using a slur about mental health, or like, oh, it was insane. Like, I might say that. Like red tape. I might say, you know, it took me 4 hours of form filling out, and then they said, we haven't done it right. I mean, it's insane. Is that something that can hurt or can marginalise?
I think even when it's not intended towards disabled people, the context and the history of the words, especially around the medicalised words like the R word, like moron, that can really hurt, because traditionally those words were used in medical settings, and a lot of the people were institutionalised or not allowed the same kinds of equality that we are allowed today. And even so, you know, people with disability, or sorry, disabled people still are institutionalised and othered and not given the opportunities that we are.
I find it such a minefield, and I know that my minefield, my non-disabled minefield, and I was told not to say able-bodied because some people's disabilities are not in their body, so I was saying non-disabled. My non-disabled minefield is nothing as compared to the way that disabled people get treated and marginalised every single day, so I need to get over it. But what words can I use? Because as a comedian, sometimes you need to be hyperbolic. So somebody on this show, she referred to PTSD in a hyperbolic way. It was an exaggeration. And someone wrote in, and the comedian question said, well, I've got anxiety. So if I say it caused anxiety, there'll be people with anxiety who'll say, that's a problem. So what can we say in terms of art and in terms of comedy? What are useful words to use that still make the joke work or still give us the emotion? Like, if I'm sitting in traffic and I'm going, this is crazy. Like, surely we should be able to get, well, what should I say?
Bananas? I don't know.
Bananas.
Bananas.
Will Queenslanders write to me? It's made me feel very upset because my banana crop was just wiped out.
Great website called Autistic Hoya, who has a list of alternative language.
What's that website?
Autistic Hoya.
Autistic Hoya.
Yes, and if you Google Autistic Hoya and language, H-O-Y-A.
Okay, I'm going to do that right now. And see what they are.
Yeah, there's great examples there, but you know, it is really hard, and even when people don't intend it, it can still hurt. And I know when
I feel rude doing this. Can somebody else turn their phone on and Google Autistic Hoya and get ready to read out some words that are useful, because I can't be Googling while I'm on stage. Who's going to do that? Okay, what's your name?
Naomi.
Naomi. So Naomi's going to do that for us. Thank you, Naomi.
Thank you. You know, when I'm sitting in the movies and the R word is used, and it has been in probably the last 4 or 5 movies I've seen, and people laugh, like the laughter is as hurtful as the word itself. And I went to see 3 Billboards in Ebbing, Missouri, which was, I thought it was a relatively well-made film and addressed a lot of issues around racism. But every time Peter Dinklage's character was on, he was called an M word, and people were laughing. You know?
It's reinforcing outdated ways of thinking about someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally get what you mean. Like, when someone makes a joke about you and everyone else condones it by laughing, that is a terrible feeling.
Mm.
And I think it's challenging. Like, I didn't realise that moron was an ableist word until you brought it up, I think, in a post. And I was like, oh, wow. So now, like you're saying, Deborah, like, what do I say? But it's, what harm does it do to me to figure out a new way of talking about something when it's making somebody else's life better? Like, I kind of go, what is the harm? Like, sure, you've got to think about stuff, but, like, what are we really complaining about? Oh, I've had to widen my vocabulary. It's so unfair.
The 3 Billboards issue, because it's fiction, and I think a lot of that film was about the nature of living in a small town in America, and if you are a woman, you're not listened to, and if you are a person of colour, you're going to be beaten up by the police. And lots of people of colour had issues with that because the black people in the movie were not centred. And there was a redemption plot for the white cop who was torturing black people, but it wasn't a redemption plot that really involved other black people. So all sorts of people had issues with that film. And I'm sure that the filmmaker, Mark McDonough, who's a brilliant man, was not intending any of that. All of our work is problematic. And I'm sure he will listen and take those things on board. But I think he will. But the... How do you demonstrate that somebody who is it right to the little person? Is that right?
Yeah, or has dwarfism.
Has dwarfism. So a man who has dwarfism in Ebbing, Missouri, in a small town, is somebody who's being marginalised. So how do we demonstrate that? How do we show that? Do you see what I mean? Without... Because Peter Dinklage obviously wanted to take that role.
Yeah.
So, and he obviously had a connection with that character and a connection with the way that character was treated.
But
so.
He has said in the past that he no longer wanted to be marginalised in such roles, and he no longer wanted to be the butt of the jokes. And when I was researching it for a piece I was writing, I haven't written it yet because I'm very tired of these words. I saw that he said a few years ago he did not want to do roles that belittle him. Yeah, he did. And I get it. Like, I get that he has to demonstrate it, and only he could demonstrate it. You couldn't have someone else cripping up. But I think that...
Can you say cripping up?
I can say cripping
okay,
up.
Okay, good.
Sorry, that's so complicated.
Cripping up, you can say, I can't say. I'm just taking a note. Thank you.
And I think it's about, you know, ownership of language, that kind of ownership.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, you're right in that he needed to demonstrate that. But it's also... How often did he have to be shown in that situation, and how could the filmmaker get the audiences to react in a different way? I mean, I gasped, the audience laughed. Because the audience doesn't see it. They don't see these microaggressions. They don't see the, you know, I mean, last night when the lady was scratching me on the arm, the people that were around me who I just met were very well-meaning, and they were sort of saying, oh, but maybe she was just being concerned. Maybe, and I said, no, look, I can pick this kind of stuff, you know. So when it piles on you day after day, this ableism, this microaggression and discrimination, you can pick that. So perhaps in Three Billboards they could have just done it once and somehow had another scene to make the audience actually feel like, well, this is wrong, like they felt that the racism was wrong.
Well, I think what Peter Dinklage, I imagine Mark McDonough thought, was that the final scene where he turns to her...
Is this a spoiler? Not that I care about whether it's a spoiler for a movie, but I'm just...
It's not a spoiler that ruins the film, but the final scene when he's on a date with Frances McDormand and he turns to her and he fronts her with how she's treating him, I feel is him saying, don't treat me like this and don't belittle me. So I feel like he was trying to demonstrate that in a way, but I also understand if you have a disability and you're watching it, you're feeling like, again, this is how this person is portrayed. So maybe it's not that we need that never to be shown, but we also need to be shown Peter Dinklage in a role where he's just a guy.
Yeah.
He's just delivering the post, or he's just waiting on the table or being the mafia boss, and it's not referenced.
Yeah, exactly.
And if we saw more of that, then it would be... It would feel more okay to disabled watchers when they saw this particular portrayal of someone in a small town being marginalised and having to stand up for himself.
Exactly.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's really fair.
Another thing that I'm really interested in, Carly, is that you are an activist, and so a lot of what you do is kind of educating people. But you're also in a position where people expect you to educate them kind of in your spare time. Like how do you deal with that when, like, it shouldn't be your job to...
We're paying her tonight, just to be clear. She is educating us, but we are giving her a paycheck that is not large, but respectful.
Yeah, there's so much of that. I can't even begin to tell you how much. Like on Facebook, you know, today I got someone asking me, why do I look the way I do? And then I gave them a little... Or they said, oh, I'm not being mean or anything, I'm just concerned. And then I... Like, I haven't...
No! Hey, I'm concerned for you. I don't know if you know. What kind of person is concerned? Just... Fill me in so I'm not concerned about you. It's just extraordinary.
And so, you know, I've got an autoresponder on, so when I'm at work, people don't expect a response. And it has a thing. If you want to know more about ichthyosis, you can go here. So then, she still hadn't, like, responded. So this morning, I left a message to say, hey, whatever your name is, here's a bit of information about my skin condition, and that's it. I might have put a smiley face. Anyway, she gave me a thumbs up, not even a thank you, a thumbs up. And then I said, do you really think a thumbs up is acceptable? And you know, and then
the use of language then, isn't it? Her language used to be thank you for explaining.
Exactly.
That's very kind. Yes. I will read more about it.
And then there's people who perhaps don't feel like I've answered it in the way they want because it makes them feel uncomfortable. So a person a few weeks ago asked if their mother have raised them not to look at anyone with a disability. So you must look away. And then so she said, but you say that you don't want to be stared at, Carly, so what do I do? Anyway, so she messaged me at about 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. 11 o'clock on the Sunday night when I still hadn't written back because it had been a big weekend.
Yeah. You might have been drinking.
For the whole 24 hours. I wasn't. But anyway, and then a bit.
I know evidence that you weren't. To be honest. It sounds like you were. Otherwise, you would have been responding to people on Facebook asking rude questions.
I would have
probably doing shots
sandwich.
To combat. Yes. Make me a sandwich.
So when I said to her, you know, I firstly used her first thing to I'm writing a book and it's called Say Hello, and I thought I'll use that question in the introduction to my book. Anyway, she messaged me the next night at about the same time. She says, well, I take it from your response, I shouldn't look at anyone then because you didn't even respond. And so because I didn't respond, she's now no longer going to look at any disabled person because I've just set that precedent.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I responded to tell her how rude she was. No response.
I was saying she wasn't looking at you. She wasn't looking at you.
Not disabled people look at them but don't stare. That's just the same for everyone, though. Because if you stared at anybody, if you're just sitting on the bus and someone was like... it would make you uncomfortable. Yeah. So, and you would start to shift away. But if someone was like, you'd be like, why are you doing that? Like, just be like normal. Just be like normal. It surely is the thing. But mother's saying, never look. I think maybe her mother said, don't stare.
Well, I had a
and
look
she's
at
taken
her...
that as look away, like as the Ark of the Covenant.
I had a look at her Facebook picture, and she looked a lot older than me. I mean, she could have been 18, I don't know, because I look 17. But, you know, she could have been in her 60s. But the late
really
great...
rubbing that into your friends, all your school friends. Like.
The late great Stella Young, who you might know, a comedian.
Yes.
She has this great quote that she said, you know, if you're just sitting next to us on the train or serving us our coffee, you do not need to know. Like, what's it going to make a difference to you? You do not need to know. I've actually quoted that a number of times to people, you know, and then told them to go look up Stella.
Yeah, you don't need to know.
It's not
you don't
make
need.
A
yeah, you don't need that information. But also, like anybody, again, like anybody's medical history, sort of like what you
like
know.
What's my lifespan?
Yeah. Oh, Carly told me that at the back. Someone said, "What's your lifespan?" Like she's a budgie. What's your lifespan? I don't know. I've not lived it yet. I mean, if you could look at my tea leaves, maybe you could tell me. Fuck you. Genuinely awful. What's your lifespan?
Oh, there's been worse.
What? Tell us.
I was on a date with this guy. Or I thought it was a date. It might not have been a date to him, but anyway, I was on a date with this guy.
I've been on one of those. Yeah. I've also been on one where I realised it was a date and I was like, oh no. He doesn't know I'm married. And then you have to subtly say my husband in the middle of the starter and watch their face. And then you really do need to stare. You were on a date.
I was on a date with this guy, and I thought he was an all right guy. He worked in disability, which is a bit worrying, really. Anyway, he said to me that, you know, he wasn't comfortable with my activism, and that should have been a kind of a flag. But then he said, you know, oh, look, I couldn't handle looking like you. I topped myself. On the date.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't marry him.
Spoiler.
Yeah, my husband's never seen.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. It's Deborah Frances White from The Guilty Feminist, briefly interrupting your podcast to let you know about some upcoming activities. On the 1st of October, we will be in Dublin at the Vicar Street Theatre, and Alison Spitter will be co-hosting that podcast. Please come along. It's going to be a very exciting night. On the 10th of October, we will be in London at the Barbican. It'll be another really big show like the Palladium. It's a 2,000-seater. Please get your tickets now. It will be all singing, all dancing, and will include, in fact, a performance by Suffragettin, as well as lots of your favourite Guilty Feminist comedians. On the 20th of October, we will be at the Liverpool Playhouse. And you can see details of all these upcoming shows at guiltyfeminist.com. I have written a book, which I'm very excited about. It's got lots and lots of new material about my views on contemporary feminism and guilty feminism, as well as a few old favourites that people have asked for to have in print. You can order it from Waterstones, and you can go to guiltyfeminist.com and click on book to find out how to do that. It's coming out in September. If you're international, you might want to go to amazon.co.uk. I am doing some book tour events in September when the book is released. The events that are sold out now are the ones in London, Manchester, Leeds, and Glasgow. But there are still tickets for the book events in Brighton, Liverpool, and Birmingham. It's £20 a ticket, but you get a hardback book included in the price. And I will be on stage talking about the book, being interviewed about the book, doing a reading from the book, and I'm happy to sign your book afterwards and say in it anything you like. So please come along to one of those events if you can. The book will be out September 6th, and all of the events are in September. Check them out at guiltyfeminist.com. Our shows are currently sold out at the Edinburgh Fringe this year, but watch this space for some exciting news coming your way very soon. And in the meantime, if you are heading up to the Edinburgh Festival Fringe, please go to guiltyfeminist.com and click on the link that says Guilty Feminist Alumni, because you will find that lots and lots of our regular guest co-hosts and some of your favourite guests over the 2 years are appearing this year and have solo shows and sketch shows up at the Edinburgh Fringe, which you'll be able to see. So if you're booking your tickets, don't forget to click that link and find all our wonderful Guilty Feminist friends and performers up there. Today, the 23rd of July at 5:30 p.m., I'm going to see The Half at the Etc. Theatre in Camden. It's written by the wonderful Danielle Ward, and it features the fantastic Margaret Cable Smith, who some of you will know from The Guilty Feminist, and the brilliant Anna Crilly, who you'll know from Anna and Katie on the television. I'm going to see this as a preview for Edinburgh, and then in the evening at 7:30 p.m, we're going to discuss it at The Guilty Feminist at King's Place. So if you're coming along to that evening show and you'd like to see the preview, please meet me at the Etc. at 5:30. The tickets are £5.50. Or if you're not coming to The Guilty Feminist but you think it sounds interesting, it's a brilliant two-hander about a female double act who are meeting up years later. Danielle Ward's writing is always very, very funny and clever and brilliant, so I think you'd really enjoy it. So hope to see you today at 5:30 at the Etc. Theatre if you're listening to this on Monday. Back to the podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Please welcome to the stage the wonderful Carl Wilson!
So I love language. I love words. I love the power of words. There are words that I love and words that I hate. One of my favourite words is feminist, because it's a magic word. Because when you say feminist to a straight guy, the word that he hears is man-hater. Like, it's magical. I don't know, maybe it's my accent or something. I don't know what it is. But I love the conversations you have when you say to someone, I'm a feminist, and he'll go, oh, yes, you hate men. And you go, no, I'm a feminist. We just want equality. And you go, yep, I heard you. You hate men. And you go, no, I just want equality. And he goes, yeah, I got it. You hate men. And you're like, no, we just want equality. Yep, I got it. I heard you. You hate men. It's like, no, we just want equality. We literally just want equality. Yep, I got it. You're a man hater. And like, it's the one time in my life when I wish straight dudes would just take things at face value. Oh, you said you wanted equality. So I thought you wanted equality. Like, just that, just take it. That's just great. Just do that. That's literally all we want. I hate the word feisty. I hate any word that is applied to a woman that a guy doesn't get. Like, you never hear a man called feisty, do you? Never hear a man called feisty, but women are feisty. You hear it all the time. Oh, she's feisty, isn't she? Oh, she's a feisty one. She's feisty, feisty, feisty. Oh, she's so feisty. Oh, feisty. What they're really saying is, cross, but manageable. That's what they're saying. They're saying, you look angry, but I reckon I could take you. That's what they are saying. You're talking about girl power before. I don't like the word girl power. Like, when you hear the word horsepower, you think power. But when you hear the word girl power, you think girl. Like, I don't like it. I feel like it's like, oh, I want equality, but not too much. I won't finish it. I don't like it. Fuck the Spice Girls. I love her. I can't explain why, but I just fucking love Victoria. I don't know why. I hate it when people tell me that I'm such a mum. I love being a mother. I love it specifically just to my kid. I'm not really interested in anyone else's. But I love my son. I love being his mum. But I really hate it when people attribute character traits that I have to me being a mum. Like, we were at a pub the other day, and we were doing a gig. And after the gig, I just picked up all the glasses that we'd had on stage, and I took them over to the bar. And a friend that I was with went, oh, look at you. You're such a mum. And it's like, no, I'm just not an asshole. Literally what I am. I'm just doing something nice. It's not because I've had someone in my uterus. Like, it's not because I've had some kind of tenant that I know how to be nice to people. I have conflicted feelings about the word slut, right? I hate the word slut, but the thing is, I love the word slut. Like, I hate what it means, but I love the sound that it makes. Like, it's such a slut. What a great sounding word. Like, it sounds like you are slapping a piece of wet salmon down on a bench. Slut! Like, that's what it sounds like, right? Such a great sound, but I hate what it means. I hate that it's a judgment against a woman on the autonomy of her own body. I hate it when you hear a guy call a woman a slut, because really what he's saying is he feels left out. He's sad that she picked everyone else but him. That's what she's sad. He's sad about that. It's like he said all over again. But what I really hate is I hate when a woman calls another woman a slut. Because you are just judging her for a hobby that you don't have. That's all you're doing. Like, I don't like mountain climbing, but I don't look at the climber and go, oh, you summit slag. Like, just... A woman is allowed to do whatever she likes. Like, I don't believe that there is such a thing as a slut. It's just someone who enjoys their own body. When I was thinking about this, I was walking around my house and I was saying slut to myself several times. And after you keep saying the word slut, it starts to sound a bit weird. And I was walking around going, slut, 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 slut. And then I was like, when you say it like that, when you keep going slut, 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 it starts to sound like someone walking in corduroy trousers. Or someone in snowboarding pants. Slut, 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 slut. And it was just quite an annoying sound. You're like, oh, Brian, can you take those off? I can hear you slutting all over the house. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to do is rehabilitate the word slut, so the next time you hear it, you're annoyed by the thought of someone keeping their legs together. Swearing, I love swearing. I find swearing really enjoyable. I think it's a beautiful condiment to language. Like, I think a little swear word peppered in places is a great way to emphasise stuff. I find that there's nothing more satisfying. Like, what could be more satisfying than stringing a whole lot of swear words together? Like, when you've jammed your finger in a drawer, like, what could be more satisfying than just going, oh, you piss face, son of a bitch bag? Like, it's just exquisite. Like, the pleasure I get, like, if I've dinged the car or something like
go, oh, you cock-faced knob garden. Like, how delicious. Like, it's delicious. I find swearing so delicious. And I try not to do it around my son. But the other night, he was getting ready for bed, and I was having a chat to him and catching up on the day. And he goes, Mum, I know swear words. And I was like, oh, do you, mate? And the thing is, right, I am always honest with my son. I try to be as honest as I can. And no one told me how much I would enjoy being honest to him. But also, no one told me how much I would enjoy lying to him as well. And I don't mean about big stuff. I'm not like, haha, he's not your real dad. Like, I'm not... fun to lie a little bit, right? So he's lying in his bed, he's got his pyjamas on, and we're talking, he goes, Mum, I know swear words. And I was like, do you, mate, what do you know? And he goes, I know shit. And I went, yep, that is a swear word. And then he goes, and I know fuck. And I went, that is also a swear word. And then he goes, and I know the C word. And I went, shit. Fuck. Because he's only 8, and I was hoping he would get a bit older before he learned that there's a really ugly word for quite a nice part of the body. Like, and I was like, what's the C word, mate? And he goes, crap. Right, yep, that is it. That's the C word. Don't let me hear you saying that around the place. Oh, that is terrible. And then he asked me another question, and because I was still busy celebrating that crap was the C word, I didn't pay enough attention to the question he was asking me, because he asked me, he said, Mum, is fuck the worst swear word? And because I wasn't concentrating, I said, no. And then I added, it's the third worst swear word. Why would I add that into the universe? Why would I put that out? Because in my head I'm going, fuck motherfucker cunt. That's what I'm doing, right? That is my value judgment on what bad swear words are. And then, of course, he wants to know what the worst swear word is. And I'm like, I can't tell you, mate. And he's like, I need to know for research. And I'm like, I cannot tell you what the worst swear word in the world is. I just really want to know. And I was like, I can't tell you. And I managed to sidetrack him into a conversation about how old he was going to have to be before he was allowed to swear. And I said he could say anything he wanted at 25. And he goes, that's too old, Mum. What about 20? And I said, you drive a hard bargain, but all right. And then he goes, what about if I'm 19 and it's my birthday tomorrow? Happy birthday, what do you say? And he goes, oh, shit. And then, because he got a mind like a steel trap, he got back on track again. He wanted to know what the world's worst swear word was. And so in the end, I went, all right, I'll tell you the world's worst swear word. I will tell you the very worst swear word in the world, but you must not say this at school. You must not say this anywhere else. You can only say it to me. You can only say it in this room. You can't even tell your dad what the swear word is. We don't have secrets in our family. We have happy surprises. About birthdays, but I've widened it out. So you must not tell anyone else in the world the swear word, but I will tell you the worst swear word in the world. Are you sure you want to know? He goes, yes, I do. Are you sure? He goes, yes, I am. I can't believe I'm going to tell you. The world's worst swear word is frompstable. And he went, really? And I went, yes. He goes, is that a real word? And I said, yes. And he goes, frompstable. And I went, oh, don't say it. I can't even hear it. And then he goes, what does it mean? And I was like, shit, I hadn't thought that far. And then I saw a book he had on the ground and had a picture of a pirate on it. So I went, frostable means pirate's bottom. And he went, no, it doesn't. A swear word wouldn't mean pirate's bottom. And I went, well, shit means poo. And he was like, what the fuck? Like, he had no idea. He just thought it was a great word. He didn't know. And then he was just like running around the room like his two favourite things together, like a swear word and poo. And he was like, shit means poo! Believing that frostable was the worst swear word in the world. And so we were going around the house and I'd be mouthing to him and be like, hey, your dad's a frostable. Oh, no, you can't say. So after 3 days, I was like, I have to tell him the truth. Like, I can't send him off into the world being like, yeah, you're frostable. Like, he'd just be beaten. So your mum was having a bit of a joke, frostable is not a real swear word. And he thought it was hilarious. Like, he's like, ah, oh, you got me. He thought it was brilliant, but what was great about it was it had gone on for just long enough that he is now programmed to respond to frostable as if it was a swear word. So if you say, hey, Digby, frostable, he'd be like, an eye, right? And so the other day, Pirate, the cat, is standing up on the counter with his back to us. And I went, hey, Digby, check it out. It's an actual frostbite. And he called the other kid motherfucker. So...
guest that we'd like to introduce at this point. I'm going to ask you, Naomi, when we have the other guest. Sorry?
There's lots.
Oh, brilliant. Great. Well, we're very happy there's lots. Okay. So we have another guest we'd like to add into the mix at this point. She is a diversity and inclusion coordinator for a prominent Melbourne football club. We're not saying which one. And she is one of two women of colour who work for the club, and they have their own club within the club, which they call Sisters Solidarity. Please put your hands together for Rana Hussein. So Rana, do you have an I'm a Feminist butt?
I do. So I'm a feminist, but yesterday when I was organising an outfit to come to last night's show, I carefully picked out something that I hoped Deborah would notice me in the crowd somehow, and that if I went up to you afterwards, you would think, oh, you're fabulous, I'll invite you on the show.
Thank you. Well, that worked. And that you really needed to be involved in this discussion, because for one reason I thought is kind of Carly has to come along and be the educator, because I think we're all a bit, I think we all, many of us, I shouldn't say we all because I'm othering, I feel many of us feel that we are sometimes clumsy with language, and I felt like Carly might be coming in going, oh, I've got to teach you numpties. She wouldn't say numpties because she's inclusive. But
say Humpty Dumpties.
Humpty Dumpties, right. That you bananas Humpty Dumpties. I've got to teach you like a school teacher. And I thought it's actually more interesting to have someone else to talk to, because you must have this all the time, because you're D&I, diversity and inclusion, for a football club, and you're one of only two women of colour who work there. How many women work there in total?
Oh, it's pretty good, the numbers of women. Unfortunately, still all in admin, not in football, so... it kind of feels like the 1950s, is everybody at a computer typing away.
Is it a bit mad many?
Yeah. Well, in my mind, yes.
Is that because you want to be Joan?
Just, yeah.
I would think football, clearly they want to be more inclusive because they've hired you to be diversity inclusion officer. But how do you educate without being sort of scoffed at or seen as token?
Yeah, this is literally what I talk about every day with my manager, and it's incredibly hard because football is its own little bubble and footy is everything, that's the most important thing, and you kind of have to give them the why. What does this mean to you? Make it important to them, basically.
So are you basically just, the way I'm visualising it in my head is that you've just got a spray bottle and whenever one of the footballers says something terrible, you just spray them in the face and go, no!
Do you think, and it's my observation from having written 3 articles on football last year and I hate football, that footballers are more ableist than the wider population?
I feel like I can't answer that because I'm not a footballer. I don't know what that's like to be an elite sports person, and I feel like that comes with a lot of shit. I think the men that I work with, the footballers that I work with, have started sport at a very young age, they're very good at it, and that's all they know. Their lives are very scheduled, and they haven't been exposed to a whole lot. That's the norm. I mean, that's the kind of general trajectory. What we do is just kind of try and be as authentic as we can when we connect with communities. So looking at what we're doing at the moment is who's historically been excluded from football. Women, LGBTQI people, people with disabilities, multicultural people, and Aboriginal people. And we've just kind of gone, okay, for the next few years, we're going to focus on this and start to build those connections. And for me, it's normalising our place and owning the game rather than being the good news story or, you know, the exotic.
You're so right. I was watching a TV show the other day, and it was called A Spartan or something like that, and they had a guy who'd been in a car accident, he'd lost his leg, and his mates had got him motivated again, and they were competing as a team. And it was like, he was clearly an elite athlete, and it was really amazing to see what they were all doing, but the commentary was all about, he's so inspiring, oh, he's so inspiring. It's like, just let him get the fuck on with what he's doing. Like, it's amazing that they're all here, but it's amazing that they're all there. And it was just that thing of holding someone up as an inspiration rather than just going, this is this dude's life, and it's...
Stella would have hated it.
Oh, so much. She would have been furious.
How much do you get that feeling, Carly, of people telling you you're inspirational just because you've made a sandwich?
Yeah, quite a bit. And it's hard because inspiration is a compliment, you know. And last night, the woman that scratched my arm and the man that manspoke
me,
they were worse than the people that told me I was inspiring. But, you know, I just had to say thank you. But I don't want to have to go into why it's problematic. But I would like to be seen as inspiring for doing a really good job at something, or for writing a really good article, or going on the Guilty Feminist podcast, for example. But I don't want to be inspiring just for sitting, you know, on the train. And sometimes when I write, it's true, because sometimes when I write an article for the media and my photo is used in the thumbnail on Facebook, the commenters will say, oh, this lady's so inspiring, I see her on the train. And I thought, well, they've never spoken to me on the train. How do they know that I'm even doing anything inspiring? Like, I'm just looking at Facebook.
Maybe it's inspiring because it's hard to get a seat on the train.
I ask, although that's been problematic too. Not inspiring when I ask for a seat. Inspiring when I've got the seat, when I don't have to ask.
What are sort of the top things, just so we can be, we're all problematic, but can we be more sophisticated in our problematicness, is what I'm saying. What are the top three, sort of the almost top basic things that we should just stop, we should just quit it as non-disabled people?
Say that to your friends, it's not okay to use these ableist slurs. Tell them to use banana.
Okay. Oh, can we have some
more? Oh, yeah, do that.
Okay, so we need to give Naomi a microphone. Oh. Wow, that was
like chariots of fire.
Yeah.
Hello.
Thank you, Naomi. Okay, so this is like Letterman now, isn't it? Okay, top 10 things we can say that aren't problematic.
So if we're in traffic and saying it's driving me crazy, you can say... It's making me livid.
Livid, okay.
Don't do this to me now.
Naomi, you said you were ready. What's happened?
I know. I've got a microphone. I'm not used to
this. No. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Okay, I'm livid.
It's infuriating.
It's infuriating.
How about if we're describing Donald Trump?
Polish?
Yeah.
What's that? Polish?
That's not problematic
at all. Say bullies. He's Polish. Bullish. Oh, bullish. Bullish.
Bleak.
Sorry.
Bleak. Yes.
Bleak. Yes. Donald Trump is bleak.
Yeah.
That's accurate. I don't feel it really gets anything off my chest.
Crappy.
Crappy. Yeah. Okay.
Evil. Gross.
Gross. Okay, gross I think we have to be careful with, because I think gross sometimes is a physical thing, and when people go, ooh, he's disgusting because he's orange and he's got bad hair and he's got a small penis and small hands and all the things that they say, it's like, if you have... I heard someone doing it the other day saying something about micropenis as an insult, and I was like, if you have a micropenis...
Oh, yeah, awful.
And everybody's laughing and going, awful. Yeah! It must be the worst thing in the world. Yeah. Like, it must be really bad. And I think the reason he's gross is not because of his physical attributes.
So I wrote a piece of fan fiction about Donald Trump in which...
Sorry, Naomi.
Okay.
Naomi's chilling. Continue.
Sorry, in which I I had him at the end replaced by a walrus rolled in cheesels. So I've done that, haven't I? Like, I've been insulting about his appearance, so it's not okay to compare him to a walrus.
I laugh, so I'm a bad activist.
Okay, here's the thing. Cat Person. Did everyone read Cat Person? Yeah. Short story in the New York Times about a young woman's sexual encounter that was nuanced and contemporary, and it was around coerced consent and various other issues. Okay. There's a bit in that where she looks at him, and she's basically gone off him. She's not sexually attracted to him anymore. And she describes in her head, she doesn't say it out loud, she doesn't fat shame, but in her head, she's momentarily disgusted by a row of fat that he has. And we were talking about it afterwards, and some people say, fat shaming shouldn't be there, da da da. I'm like, okay, we were talking about it afterwards, and we're saying, it's a work of fiction. She, in her head, in that moment, she was physically repulsed. But she wasn't physically repulsed by the fat, she was physically repulsed by him, because she didn't want to be with him. And she found a thing, you know, if you're with someone, and you've just gone off them touching you, and then suddenly you think, oh, their toenails, or he could have a six pack and you could think, oh, you know, vein, or, you know, gristly, or something like that. Like, anything about them will disgust you if you're disgusted by them. And I don't want to live in a world where somebody can't have a secret thought in their head in a fictional story, or it's fat shaming. That concerns me, because that feels Orwellian, because we do think these things, and we're human, and that's fiction. But also, I think a lot of our if Donald Trump was currently standing up to the NRA and socializing medicine, we wouldn't describe him that way, because we wouldn't be repulsed by him, we'd be drawn to him. It's not a good reason to say oh, he's gross because he's fat, but do you see what I mean? I think your remark about walruses is actually quite anti-walrus for a start. But secondly, it's about, I find you disgusting, and therefore whatever you are, do you know what I mean? Like, if Justin Trudeau was doing those things, we'd go, ooh, he's so smarmy, and he so looks like he used car salesman. You don't, Justin, if you're listening. You look at
what if Justin Trudeau was doing the same stuff as
well? I'd say you look like a used car salesman, but you're not Justin, and I don't. I find that repellent then. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's tricky. But the thing is, people who look like Justin Trudeau are not marginalised for their physicality.
Yeah. Like, when England and Australia have a rivalry, there's an equality between the countries. It would be very different, say, if you were taking a piss out of another country that was marginalised. So is there leeway then, if it is someone who is in a position of power, that you know, because people are trying to take him down and mock him for his tiny hands and things like that, because they feel like it's a way of rendering him, now I'm going to say impotent, which is maybe not a word to use as well. You know, like,
it's a minefield.
It is a
minefield. I don't think tiny hands is a problem, because tiny hands isn't a stereotype. The tiny handed of the world haven't been mocked since childhood, and I mean, all children have tiny hands, so that's but do you know what I mean? Like, I just don't think, I think tiny hands is peculiar to Donald Trump, and it's not a stereotype, and I think that's different from small penis, which is a stereotype, mm. and is much more problematic. Am I right, Carly? Again, fix this.
No, I think I'm the fixer of the whole.
Well, I'm afraid you have to be.
I think that, isn't that why we brought Rana on?
Yeah, Rana also.
I think that, you know, we need to be punching up, not down. And so if we were mocking someone that wasn't Donald Trump about his appearance, to the extent that we are mocking Donald mm-hmm. Trump, then that would be bad. But Donald Trump is in power and he's an evil man. But we can still use, like, we should be focusing on the things that he does, not the way he looks like. You know?
Oh, yeah. I get a clap. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. And that is, like, one of the core tenets that people talk about with comedy, is that you punch up and not down. Because why do you want to marginalise someone who is already marginalised? But it is that thing of, like, wanting to speak truth to power that comedians go on about. So I think you're exactly right.
So it's more desirable to talk about his policies and his behaviours. Mm. So some people are saying he's psychotic. Some people are saying he's a narcissist. And other people are saying don't project mental health issues on him, because then that marginalises people with mental health issues. But there are a series of psychiatrists that have got together and said he does seem to have a personality disorder. But then my friends who are psychiatrists said to me years ago, they were talking about Gordon Brown, our Prime Minister at the time in Britain, and he wouldn't leave. And I said, how does he not wake up every day and everyone's going, go, go, go? And he's going, no, I still think I'm the best person for the job. And the psychiatrist said, oh, because he's a sociopath. And I was like, what? And they said, no, not especially. They said all heads of state have to be sociopaths because you have to have an inflated sense of yourself and your own abilities. A neurotypical person can't do the job. And they were just like, oh, that's just a fact. And so any head of state usually is neurodivergent in that way, but Donald Trump has too much of that going on. So it's almost like you're incapable of doing the job if you have a regular, typical amount of interest in what other people think, a normal amount of empathy. But if you have as much as Donald Trump has or Mugabe has, then you do the job very badly. Now, there are some people who say if you say anything about mental health, then you're tarring everybody who has mental health issues as the same brush. And I don't really agree with that. I think, well, there's sciatica, there's diabetes, and there's cancer. Those things are different. And there's lots of different sorts of mental health issues. Some of them are dangerous. Most of them are not. Most people with mental health issues have much more chance of being the victims of violence than the perpetrators. But some conditions are dangerous. Are we able to say that? I feel like...
Can I weigh in?
Please.
Some of this, I feel like, is the problem of needing to find kind of neat, tidy sound bites to express ourselves. And you know, Twitter is the main example of that. And I think, and you know, we're talking about language. We need to just use language as our tool and extend ourselves and extend the conversation and use the amount of language that we need to say what we actually mean, rather than saying mental health and then going, all right, well, I'll just throw that up and hopefully some people know what I mean. You know, it's extending our energy and our, you know, brain power to actually be specific and make the point and use language to break down whatever barriers. And I think we were talking about it before that often in this conversation what happens is we kind of then withdraw and say, well, I won't have the conversation at all and I'm scared I'll offend and I'm just going to stop and look at you or not, you know, hide away. And I think for me personally anyway, I would much rather have the offensive question or the awkward conversation than have nothing at all and no chance to connect. And I think that for me is the ultimate kind of point.
Okay,
of
so you're asking for nuance on Twitter. Right. You're saying...
Dream.
So, but I think you're right. We need to fully explain what we mean. And if it can't be said in 140 or 280 characters, don't say it. Don't say it there. There's other ways of speaking that aren't Twitter. And we've forgotten that.
Exactly.
And not everything has to be a Facebook post. It can be a conversation. It can be a blog. It can be a longer podcast discussion. It can be... There are other ways of talking about these things.
And I think also, like, if you take a risk in talking to someone and you get it wrong, that... Listen to what you're being told as well. Like, don't get defensive and shut the conversation down. Like, suppose I was the ridiculous woman that offered you a scratch. It really wasn't me. It wasn't me. But if you had said something to me, if I had done that, I shouldn't just go, oh my God, this is mortifying. I'm not going to double down and shut you down and say, well, you should be grateful for it or whatever. It's to go, this is so uncomfortable, but I want to get past this and I want to find a better outcome kind of thing. So it's that thing I think of when we feel like we're taking a risk and it's uncharted waters because the person in front of us looks different to us or we've had no exposure to diversity in any way, that you take the risk in the conversation and you listen to what you're told rather than freaking out. Like,
and I think it's really hard to, you know, call out this language stuff and the behaviour, and especially online, because people are so defensive. And, you know, when I've done it, I've lost friends and I've lost people that I admire because I've bravely spoken up. And recently I talked to a comedian who I called out and I said, you know, I really admire you. I'm really scared to say this. And they blocked me on Twitter. And,
what?
You know, I was pretty devastated because
I
was a fan for years and I framed it politely and I gave them this information that linked to Autistic Hoya, and you know, and
it makes, he blocked you on Twitter.
Yeah,
I'm assuming it was a man.
Yeah. it makes me more scared to do it in the future. And you know, now I've taken to private message, but you know, it's hard because I've lost friends as well because they feel like they've had their
lost
right.
Friends.
Yeah, they feel like they've had the right to say the R word. You know,
well, then
so their
friends.
Right to offend is bigger than a disabled person's right.
But then I also think that as a non-disabled person, it's also my job if my friend uses the R word, which hasn't happened, but it's also my job to go, you can't say that.
Because people have this weird thing, I think, where it's like if a woman talks about someone being sexist towards her, straight cisgendered guys have a tendency to dismiss it. But if another straight cisgendered guy goes, hey, that's really fucking sexist, they're like, oh, he is so right. He is so right. Like, sometimes if you can't hear the person that is affected by it, so you have to listen to someone who looks like you so that you know it's the truth.
Yeah. And allies are so important. There was an article today on Facebook about an actress who turned down the, just dropped herself out of the auditioning process for Black Panther because she said, I'm light-skinned, there's loads of roles for me. I'm a light-skinned black woman, and this is one of the only films for dark-skinned black women. I'm not going any further. And to ally up, to pull out, to say, hey, I'm a white woman, there's enough of us on this panel, or I'm a white man and I think there could be a woman of colour on this panel, so I'm going to walk away from it. I think allies just need to start doing it now. We need to start, we're really allies. We have to sacrifice ourselves. Naomi, do you have any final words we can use? Positive words?
Positive for Trump.
Oh, no, no, no. Just general words that are useful to use instead of ableist language, instead of like, it's mental. What else can we say?
The list is so long.
Good. Well, give us three that you like.
Contemptible.
Yes.
That's a good,
good
word.
Good word. Good vocabulary.
Asinine.
Oh, that's asinine. Also oh, really these good. Are good words. I'm going to sound so sophisticated.
Ignoramus.
Okay, all right. So we've got a bunch there, but you can go to Autistic Hoya and check out more if you want them. It's useful. I mean, I'm going to give up this kind of ableist language for Lent, and I'm not going to take it up again. Rana, do you have anything to plug? Anything you'd like us to look at or anywhere you'd like us to go? Any football team you'd like us to support? Obviously, you haven't said which one, but you are a football fan, aren't you?
Yes, I do love my football. I feel like a dork saying that in here. Can you say, is dork?
I think
cool? Because
Carly has endorsed dork. It's been officially endorsed.
Come up to me at 11 o'clock at night on Facebook.
I will say, I won't out my club, and I love my club, and I think it's a great place, blah, blah, blah. But I will say, so genuine, if you do like football, go and check out the community stuff that your team does, because all the community sectors in football clubs are doing some amazing work, and it's just a lot of people who use this huge brand to kind of get some amazing work done, so check all that out.
We will do that. Thank you so much. Carly, anything to plug?
Yes, I'm writing a book. Don't ever write a book. It's awful.
It's awful, right? It's awful. I said that. And never do it.
I do a lot of my writing in bed because I'm sore and I often fall asleep.
Oh, I do it in bed just because I'm lazy. No good reason. But I sit, I prop myself up and I do it in bed. I do loads. Yeah.
I love the thought that each chapter in your book ends with zzzz. Yeah.
What's your book called?
It's called Say Hello, and it's going to be out in the middle of the year.
Marvellous. We will all buy that. Cal Wilson, have you got anything to plug?
I've got my show Hindsight coming up at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. It's also going to Brisbane. It's going to Sydney and Canberra and Perth.
Go and check that out. I have co-created with the BBC a new podcast called Grown Up Land. It's about being a grown-up, and it's featuring Mae Martin, Bish Kayali, and Ned Sedgwick, who you'll know from Global Pillage if you listen to that. It's Grown Up Land, BBC Radio 4 podcast. Please check it out, and it's just such a great show. Follow The Guilty Feminist on Twitter at GuiltFemPod. Check out our Instagram and all of the other things. Rate, review, and subscribe. Give it 5 stars. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me. Carly Finlay and Rana Hussein. Producer was Thompson and Skip for the spontaneity shop and Jeff Ring for Australian Comedy Management. Thanks to everyone at the Malthouse Theatre as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit GuiltyFeminist.com. Golfing is not a feminist sport. What? What an outrageous thing to say. There are so many feminist golfers. Sure. But overall, the reputation of golf is like men who drive Volvos, not Volvers. But I know that there are loads of amazing golfers who are feminists.
Who are those golfers?
I know that they are out there. What about Amanda Puttington?
Amanda Puttington.
Yeah.
That's a children's book.
Sarah 19th hole.
Oh, I don't think she's a golfer. sci-fi woman who's got 19 holes. That would be amazing. I'm going to write that speculative fiction story.
Orifice in space.
What seems to be the problem, orificer?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.